Welcome. I'm Lisa Bennett, and this is the Conference for Women podcast. As we come to the end of a rather tumultuous year for women, filled with many dramatic ups and downs, we want to shift gears, get refreshed, and get inspired for 2019. So our topic is fearlessness. What is it? How do we cultivate it? And where can it lead us? With us to talk about this is literally the woman who wrote the book on it. Jean Case, chairman of the National Geographic Society and CEO of the Case Foundation, is a philanthropist, investor, and internet and impact investing pioneer who advocates for the importance of embracing a more fearless approach to innovate and bring about transformational breakthroughs. Her career in the private sector, including as a senior executive at AOL, spanned nearly two decades before she co-founded the Case Foundation in 1997. Jean serves on many boards and was elected to the American Academy of Arts and Sciences in 2016. Her first book is scheduled to be released in January. It's called Be Fearless, Five Principles for a Life of Breakthroughs and Purpose. Jean, welcome.
Thank you, Lisa. I've been looking forward to our time together and look forward to chatting.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for being with us. I must admit, this is one of my all-time favorite topics, and I want to learn everything I possibly can from you today. But I want to acknowledge at the outset that while it's an exciting topic, it's not necessarily an easy one for everyone to master. And if I can be personal for just a moment, my son is a competitive big mountain skier and fearless by nature. I, on the other hand, am not, and have to repeatedly tell myself as I go through life, you've got this. Has fearlessness come easy to you, or have you really had to work at it?
You know, I would say I really have had to work to overcome fear many times, both throughout my personal life and my career. And in fact, you know, in the book, I try to share vignettes about that. I think there are a lot of people who stand aside and look at others and say, that could never be me. But indeed, anyone can be fearless. It's not this idea that you don't feel fear, but rather the ability to dig deep and overcome it, find the courage to face it and move on. And the book is filled with strategies about how to do that as you move both through life and through a career.
Well, I'm glad to hear it didn't necessarily go easily to you. You know, I think that's such an important point, because it's, you know, sometimes we look at other people and we just think, oh, they're the masters of it. They were born with it. And, you know, what's so encouraging to me about your book is it does have this roadmap for how to develop
it. But as you know, I mean, one of the things I point out in the book is that really most of us are born with fearlessness, and then something happens as we move through life, right? And we begin to fear maybe, you know, what we might risk or what we might lose. But if we could go back to that early person, that early voice, there usually was a fearlessness, as we would do, you know, all kinds of crazy things as kids. And then somewhere along life's path, I think we grow a little more conservative. So this is really almost a call back to how we were as young people. And as I said, with hopefully really clear steps that can help someone get started if they feel they've moved away from that fearlessness.
Well, that's a great segue to asking you to share your own personal story, which you tell so movingly in the book. I wonder if you would share
sure.
that.
Well, thanks, Lisa. Well, as I make clear right at the start in the book, I kind of laugh because I grew up in a town literally called Normal. And really what we're trying to do in the book is make it clear that ordinary people can do extraordinary things. And so being raised in a town called Normal, you might imagine I saw myself as just a normal kid, and I was a normal kid in many respects. And it was a small town that was a wonderful place. It was almost like a nest, I felt like, to be raised in. But my parents divorced when I was a child, and my mom made a decision to move her four children down to South Florida. So I was raised by a single mom as the youngest of four. And that was kind of a life-altering experience that I talk about just a bit in the book. What seemed to me at the time to be a disaster, actually, I could look back later and say it teed up all kinds of wonderful opportunities down the line. And really, that is my sort of story in the book, that every time I saw something that seemed like, you know, a looming threat or a failure, I could then put the pieces back together looking back and realize how that set me up for a future success. And, you know, I talk about Albert Einstein's quote, which is, failure is success in progress. But we all know when we're going through those dark moments or those low moments or those bumps in the road, it's sometimes hard to see that this may be setting us up for success down the line. But time and time again, if you look at anybody who's achieved any kind of success, you'll see a failure story along the way. Just what happens too often is that that story gets sanitized and they take out those parts. So I thought it was really important for me to add all of my bumps in the road as I went along my career path and to point out how they teed me up really for future success.
Yeah. You know, the point that you make about being born with fearlessness and then we get conservative or try to hold on to it, hold on to what we have, I suppose, which makes us cautious. Mm-hmm. I wonder if there's a personal story you might share there about, you know, the young fearless Jean case and before that came along.
Right. Well, you know, it's funny because it's actually a little bit of a joke, and I gave my brothers a really hard time about the fact that they used to say these kind of things to me, but I put a line in the book early, your audience is mostly women. And so as girls, mm-hmm. I think we were given a lot of messages around don't do that, that maybe some of our boy counterparts didn't get. And in my case, you know, I really loved sports as a kid. I was a terrible tomboy, took on the boys in the neighborhood with anything. And I came home one day and my brother said, you know, if you want a boy to like you, you better stop beating him when you go one-on-one with him in basketball. And, you know, if you think about that, it's funny at one level, but it really mm-hmm. was almost a message of don't take that risk of, you know, being first, don't be competitive against boys. And I know women everywhere have heard different messages about that as they've moved through life too. So, you know, sometimes those messages come early, but they also can come in sort of more nuanced ways as we move through our adulthood. And I think that's the reason it's doubly important. And it's actually a big part of the reason why I included women innovators, women entrepreneurs, and women change makers throughout the book, because I think it's important to hear the stories of how people overcame the very messages they might have been receiving as they moved through life.
Right, right. You know, I have to ask, you have accomplished so much in so many different aspects of your professional career. What was it that made you decide, I want to sit down and write a book about this theme?
Well, you know, what we should point out is the Be Fearless principles that are talked about in the book, and there are five principles, and the subhead, of course, is five principles for a life of breakthroughs and purpose. We at the Case Foundation, where I serve as CEO, about 6 years ago, we did some work. We took a look back and around asking one question, which was, why is it when some people or organizations chase big opportunities or challenges, they break through while others don't? And it didn't seem to have a lot to do with capital or genius, or we were asking, might there be a secret sauce we could uncover? So we hired some social scientists and did some research around this. And it was out of that that the five principles were born. They're easy to understand. You know, it's a way almost to chunk it down, if you will, in terms of what does it take to get from where you are today, maybe to taking a big idea forward. And it turns out these are consistent across organizations, across movements, even in the life of many individuals who went on to extraordinary success. So that was really the basis of the Be Fearless work. And I think we were so moved as we would go out there and share the principles across sectors to see how people were really inspired by them. And I share some stories about what we heard back from people who were exposed to those principles, maybe at a key moment in life when they were facing a decision about whether to be fearless themselves. So we knew there was something here. And then, you know, combine that with the fact that I have had the wonderful privilege of seeing so many terrific people and ideas all over the world. It just seemed to be a terrific opportunity to do some storytelling about extraordinary people and extraordinary ideas that found success as part of teaching the principles.
So certainly want to dive into asking you to discuss what those principles are. But before we pivot to that, you know, I'm curious if in the course of your work, you also uncovered some myths, some, you know, really common misunderstandings about the nature of fearlessness.
Yeah, well, I would say all kinds of things. And again, these are shared throughout the book. But I think it just starts with this myth out there that to be great, you have to have something extra special, that you have to have extra genius, you might have to have privilege, you might have to have wealth. Now, I'd be the first to say any of those are going to, you know, help you dramatically, but they are not necessary or essential to break through. And I think that's the big message. I go back to saying, really, there are many ordinary people who find a path forward to do extraordinary things. So the really big myth that we're trying to bust here is that it's only a special select number of people that can be great. And I really think when you look at the stories in the book of some of these incredible people who started out really against all odds and found success, it can be an inspiration, hopefully, for anyone.
Yeah. And the fact that this work of yours is also rooted in social science, you know, as well as real stories, is pretty powerful. So let's talk a little bit about the five principles. Can you walk us through those?
Sure. And I'll do it rather quickly. And then maybe when we talk about the stories, we can drill down a little bit more on what do we mean when we say that. But they're pretty obvious. The first is we like to say, make big bets and make history. And the idea there is, if you have a big idea, don't settle for incremental change. Really, you know, aim for the stars, have a big idea that could be transformational. The second principle is take risks, experiment early and often. And we probably want to talk a little bit more about that, because it's particularly along that principle and the next one when I start sometimes seeing people wiggle in their seats. This idea of risk taking, maybe we can unpack that a little bit. The next is make failure matter. And the idea is, look, if you're trying to innovate in any way, if you're trying something new, chances are you are going to have some failures or bumps in the road along the way. We say, get up, keep going, apply the lessons of that failure with not only in your own life, but if you can with others, and keep moving forward. The next is reach beyond your bubble. Another definition of that would be build unlikely partnerships. It's the idea that where we've seen transformational change, it's because there have been a diverse set of perspectives looking at things, a diverse team coming together with different backgrounds and maybe different skill sets. And that's so important. And in America, you know, you talked about, is there another myth we tried to bust? In America, there's this myth that it's a lone genius working in a garage somewhere, in a lab somewhere. The book makes clear that is truly a myth. The greatest things have really involved a myriad of people bringing different skill sets and backgrounds together. And the last is maybe my favorite, let urgency conquer fear. And I'm glad it's the last principle in the book, because it really is the clarion call out both to those listening today, but to anyone who reads the book. And that is, you know, right now we feel what Martin Luther King called the fierce urgency of now. And I think if we can take that and use that as a motivator to push us out of our comfort zone to maybe try some new things or follow that idea we've had, but we've just, you know, maybe been paralyzed with fear, thinking, I can't do that. I'm hoping the urgency of now will move people.
So let's go backwards in your order a little bit there, starting with your favorite. This idea of the urgency of now, it has been for women a rather dramatic period of time. Do you observe that, you know, moving women to a direction more fearlessness?
No question. If you look at both the Me Too movement and the Time's Up movement, you know, I think those are women who saw a situation and said, you know what, it's time for me to act. The moment is here. They felt a sense of urgency to come forward and to play a role in trying to change what they thought they might be able to change. So yeah, I do think women particularly are feeling this time that we're living in, and a special call, whatever it is, you know, to get out there and to make the change that they hope to see in the world.
Yeah. And naturally, there's no way to really forecast, but, you know, we are excited about this conversation as a, you know, setting a framework for 2019, right, to inspire all of us to embrace more of a sense of fearlessness.
Yeah. You know, and as far as the stories go, Lisa, you know, the first chapter is Start Right Where You Are. And I open with remarkable woman, Barbara Van Dalen, who was a sole practitioner doing mental health counseling, and saw a challenge developing about a decade ago. And that challenge was, as veterans and their families came back, you know, many of them suffered with mental health challenges, and the VA and the various organizations set up to service veterans couldn't handle the capacity. So Barbara said, well, I as one person can do something. I could give an hour or two pro bono every week. Then she began to ask her friends to do the same. And ultimately, she came up with a really big bet, which was, what if we could create a national network of mental health workers who will give 1 hour a week? She called the new organization she was forming Give an Hour. And before she was done, she had many thousands of mental health providers all over the nation giving 1 hour or more a week pro bono to veterans and their families. And it made a big difference in terms of the ability to scale the help that was needed. She went on to be so celebrated for her work that Time named her among the 100 most influential people in the world. She was just really someone sitting in her office one day, not having run a big organization, not having a big bank account, not having, you know, any sort of accolades that she would bring forward. But she asked the question, what can I do? How can I start right where I am to make a difference in this area that I care about? And, you know, I think opening the book with that story was so important because hopefully anyone can see himself or herself in a similar circumstance, saying, maybe I don't have what I need to do the really big idea yet, but I can start somewhere.
Right. And you know, I think because people feel so exposed to a lot of negative stories these days, there, you know, there can be that direction of despair.
Yes.
But holding up these stories as you do, you know, just demonstrates what's possible and inspires folks. So is there a story related to the principle that you say people tend to wiggle around a little bit about taking risks that comes to mind?
Yeah, well, you know, I would say most stories that we tell in the book have risk baked into them, because it's the one constant is, if you're going to break through, you have taken risks along the way. You know, by very nature, innovation requires risk taking. So one of the things we really try to make clear in the book is that risk taking, you know, that title can sometimes cause people to have a visceral reaction that is not necessarily positive. But what we point out is, what if you looked at risk taking as R&D? We all understand the point of research and development, you know, in science, in labs, et cetera, and in technology too. But we don't, for some reason, think that applies in our personal life. And so one of the things I challenge folks to think about is, how could you, instead of thinking about it as scary risk, could you actually chunk it down to almost an R&D approach of something you want to try and begin somewhere and really see it as experimentation? And I think when we look at risk through that lens, it's so much less scary. And I also talk about, you know, Steve Jobs said many times, look, you know, it's not about the R&D dollars you have. That doesn't define who wins. It's really the culture and the passion that you bring to something. And I mean, that's one of our greatest innovators of all time saying that, pointing out that Apple was overspent by a large amount in terms of what they could bring to R&D, but they had a cleverness, they had a doggedness, they had perseverance, and really a passion that they brought. And I think for anyone wanting to take something new and big forward, think about it as R&D as you go each step.
It's a great idea. It makes you wonder whether the way, you know, we think so much in this country about success is kind of a double-edged sword.
I really think it is, Lisa. You know, I think when we say I'm going to take a risk, there's almost like a trepidation of what if I fail? Whereas if I say, no, I'm going to do some R&D on this, there's almost a built-in expectation that not everything is going to work. And so then when you do have bumps in the road, it's not, you know, devastating. It's not the end of the world, because you kind of knew going into it, you might be trying some things that might not turn out, but you just keep going, right? You pivot, you make whatever you need to do in terms of change, and you just keep going.
Yeah, that's very, very helpful. You know, I've seen a lot of research on both sides about risk-taking and women, some suggesting women are less inclined to take risks than men, and others saying, no, just, you know, women are just as inclined. What is your perspective on that?
Well, you know, it's interesting because I think that we live in a unique time where, you know, even talking about gender tendencies is a little bit controversial. Mm-hmm. But I will say, I do think there tends to be more of a tendency on behalf of women to be a little more risk averse. And I give women credit for that. I mean, if you think about it, we've largely been tasked with raising the children, right? It's been our job to, you know, think about safety, to keep them safe. That's kind of where our heads go naturally. And so I think we live in a time of transition where as more of us break out, as more of us have careers, as more of us take on many of the same things men have taken on that require risk, we see no difference. We see that, you know, the same kind of risk can be taken and the same kind of success can be achieved. But I do feel like it's almost a cultural thing that we have to overcome. And by the way, this has been talked about a lot too. It's kind of what I said at the start of this conversation. We have to monitor what we say to young girls versus what we say to young boys and encourage them to take risks in the same way we're more inclined to with boys.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Are there any specifics there that, you know, when you think about how to talk to young people? I mean, we have a range of folks that listen in to this. If you were speaking specifically to someone just starting out, would your advice change at all?
Yourself. Yeah, I would say check yourself. You know, I try to do the same thing. I try to do that same thing as I move through life, not just with children, but with anyone. And am I, you know, bringing a bias into this conversation or in the advice I'm going to give that puts them in a box? It's just not helpful in any way. And so it's no different really with gender, not to expect more things out of one or a different set of standards for another.
Right. So I'd like to ask of these five principles: make a big bet, be bold, take risks, make failure matter, reach beyond your bubble, let urgency conquer fear. Is there one that's been most important in your life that you might share a story about?
You know, they're really all kind of like my children. So I don't really want to go to just one.
I understand.
But I'll give you two. And again, I'm going to focus a little more on women for purposes of this conversation. But of course, the book is chock full of stories of men and women. But there are probably two that in my mind sort of bookend in a unique way. One takes us back in time to over 100 years ago. There's an African-American woman, daughter of slaves. Her name was Madam C.J. Walker. And can you imagine living in that time where your parents and all your siblings were slaves and you come along and finally you were born free? But as we know, even if you were born free, the challenges of the world back then were pretty dramatic. So CJ had an idea. Her hair was falling out and her brothers were barbers, and it was an ongoing conversation in their family about what to do. So she started putting some concoctions together to see if basically she could do something with her hair to bring back more of it. And she found success. And so she decided that maybe there was a business opportunity there. So she went forward with this hair care line, and she marketed it all over the United States, traveling from city to city to city over 100 years ago. And ultimately found so much success in the business that she is believed to be the first self-made female millionaire in America. This was a slave 100 years ago. So I'm saying to any women out there, hey, if she could do that, then can't we dig deep and find something we can aim for, something we can try to break through at. And then the bookended story I'll give you is a young woman named Jordan Shirah. She first came to our attention at the age of 14 when we were doing a campaign at the Case Foundation called Finding Fearless. And we asked people to bring us fearless stories. Jordan's idea, she had recognized that millions of young people around the nation were abusing drugs. And she had a passion around trying to find a way to basically dispose of drugs so that they weren't available to young people who might then go on to use them. So proper disposal. So she went to her town and asked them if they'd write a grant to try to get something started for this disposal. And they refused. So she went to the next town and they said, well, maybe they would write it, but then they wouldn't share it with her town. So she said, you know, forget it. I'm going to write my own grant. And that's what she did. And she won it. And then she was so wise as a young teenager that she decided to split the money between the two communities. Well, today, over 1.5 million pounds of drugs have been taken off the streets because of young Jordan's efforts.
Wow.
So it's a very contemporary story with a contemporary problem, bookended against the story I just gave, you know, which was a century ago. But in both cases, fearless women who had a big idea and said, I can start somewhere, and went on to achieve extraordinary things. And Madam C.J. Walker, by the way, didn't only find success financially, she went on to become one of the most celebrated philanthropists of her time. There are buildings named after her in Indianapolis. It's really, really a great story.
It's incredible. You know, so much of what you write about in the book and that I hear you saying today seems to me to be about, you know, befriending failure, that in order to be fearless, you have to not be afraid of failure, that it's part of the process.
Right. And more importantly, even if you are a little afraid of failure, stare it down and move past it. Pick up those lessons and keep going.
I love that. I'm wondering if you would, before we need to wrap up soon, if you would tell a story about, you know, when things didn't work out for you. And you learned from that.
Yeah. Well, you know, I write about probably what was the most public professional failure for me. At the Case Foundation, we had launched a very significant clean water initiative targeted at 10 sub-Saharan African countries, bringing what really is the equivalent of a child's merry-go-round, that as children would go around on it, it would pump clean water from deep in the ground. So it seemed brilliant to us. Children get to play and we deliver clean water in the process. And it was launched with a great deal of fanfare. It was at the Clinton Global Initiative, and I had President Clinton to my right and First Lady Laura Bush to my left. So there was quite a bit of profile around this. And then we brought a lot of partners and friends into the initiative as well. Well, sort of right out of the gate, we began to hear some concerns about the execution on the ground and some different issues popping up in villages around. So we spent about a year or two trying to course correct, really sort of make it work on the ground, and we just weren't getting there. And so finally, we had a board meeting. We had a fearless board at the time. And I said at the time, look, we've got a choice to make. We can either try and sweep this under the rug and pretend nobody noticed, which didn't seem so likely. Or, you know, we can try and course correct or pivot a new way forward. But any way that we do this, we have to come clean and be transparent about this failure. So I wrote a blog called The Painful Acknowledgement of Coming Up Short, in which I acknowledged the failure of taking forward this particular initiative. And it was very painful. And I remember not wanting to hit that send button, but I did. But then something really terrific happened. Two things. We found a new way forward to pick up those lessons of failure, and we pivoted and worked with a couple of other water organizations and felt great about the work going forward after that. But more importantly, after the acknowledgement of that failure, I started hearing from friends and associates who said, thank you for talking about failure, because we try to do these big things in life and they don't always work, but mostly we don't get to hear from people about what failed or what their experience was. So that might have been some of the origins of our Be Fearless campaign that day, because it was very clear to me that there was an appetite to talk about failure, not to celebrate it, but to learn from it. And so we began having these fail fests, and people would come together and talk about different challenges and failures they'd had along the way, and we would learn from each other.
Fail fest, what a great phrase. I would love to continue to talk with you. We are so sadly out of time, but the good news for our listeners is your book is coming out next month. It is beautiful. I love the personal stories too that you share at the beginning, at the end, and I really hope listeners will give themselves the gift of picking it up for the new year. Be Fearless, 5 Principles for a Life of Breakthroughs and Purpose. And Jean, thank you so very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Lisa. It's been a real delight to chat with you, and thanks for all you do.
See you next month.